Accelerated stalls. What are they, and why do we keep having them week after week? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. And we're here to talk about safety issues, as we often do on Mondays. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners.
Well, my pleasure, Paul. Good to be here.
I want to jump back to the December issue of Over the Airwaves, which is still available at overtheairwaves.com. And your new feature called Airwork, which is a return to the basics. Obviously, we see a lot of accidents, even up into the airlines, where something went wrong that should have been, you know, part of basic flight training way back when somebody got their private certificate and either wasn't taught properly or just hasn't been maintained at a level of proficiency. And in the December issue, you concentrated on accelerated stalls. Let's start by telling our listeners, what is a stall and what is an accelerated stall?
Well, a stall, as you know, is when the angle of attack of a wing exceeds what's called the critical angle of attack, and we lose separation of that laminar flow of air across the top of the wing, and the wing simply stops flying. An accelerated stall is more or less is a turning stall where we have the airplane in a bank, and when we bank the airplane, of course, the weight of the airplane increases because of the increased centrifugal force on the wing. And then when we bank the airplane, the stall speed increases because of the added weight on the wing. And so when we conduct an accelerated stall, basically we're rolling the airplane over to 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 degrees, and then pulling back to a point where the wing stalls. It stalls at a higher airspeed, and the response to that stall is usually a little bit more dramatic than a level wing stall.
I have to notice, too, that it's far more likely in a bank turn to stall one wing before the other.
Well, yeah. I mean, the aerodynamics that are taking place in a turn are considerably different than in level flight. We do have an imbalance in lift between the two wings. As I said before, we have added the weight of the airplane and the centrifugal force because of the centrifugal force taking place. And it's oftentimes in a bank where an airplane results not only in a stall, but then from that it goes immediately into a spin. And when it happens close to the ground, the consequences are nearly always fatal. It is a significant problem today because we continue to log about one fatal stall spin accident a week in the United States, some 50 a year. So going up to a safe altitude, you know, generally up above 3,000 to 4,000 feet, and then practicing accelerated stalls are something that all proficient pilots need to do. There's lots of ways of setting them up. One particular way that I think is extremely useful is to put the airplane into a power on climb, full power, and climb it as if we were going to do a power on stall. But leave your feet flat on the floor, not on the rudder pedals. And of course, what's happening when we do this, we're inducing a great deal of yaw in the airplane because of the natural four left turning tendencies. And with our feet planted firmly on the floor, when that airplane stalls, it's going to be yawed and we'll snap quickly, into a spin if we're not careful. Going up and practicing this in an accelerated stall fashion where we are flying coordinated, but in a bank turn, we have a little bit more sense or control of what's happening. And we can see how these unusual attitudes, when combined with a stall, can create very interesting aerodynamics and if we're not careful, loss of control of the airplane.
Well, Bob, you've mentioned how often this happens. We still have something on the order of 50 of these happen a year with fatalities. And they seem to often happen at unrecoverable altitudes because they're happening in traffic patterns as people are turning downwind to base or base to final, whatever. You mentioned in your article that a quick check of the pilot operating handbook will tell us the stall speed of our aircraft by given configurations. And we know, too, that we can then apply some simple, fairly simple math. For example, in a 60-degree turn, that's a load factor of 2 Gs. The square root of 2 is 1.41. So therefore, roughly 1.5 times whatever our straight and level stall speed is what our stall speed will be in a bank turn. And these things are all like, you know, chiseled on cave walls. Why does this still keep happening?
I think they're not reading the caved walls. When I've conducted flight reviews, I'll say, what is the stall speed of your aircraft? And they'll say, well, Bob, it's 40 knots. And I'll say, well, you know, we're out here in this turn from downwind to base, and we're over 45 degrees in this turn. I said, now tell me again, what is your stall speed? And they'll say, as I said before, it's 40 knots. For some reason, they missed that class on aerodynamics when we talked about increased stall speeds associated with bank turns. And the way to demonstrate in a way that the student won't forget is to then take that student up to a safe altitude, 3,000 to 4,000 feet or higher, and then have them go ahead and do the same simulated downwind to base or base to final turn. But as he does it, just pull the airplane into a stall with him, and he'll see that that airplane is going to stall at a speed much higher than the 40 knots that he had originally been claiming was the stall speed of his airplane. So to answer your question, I think this is one of the reasons why I'm trying to emphasize this in the airwork section on Over the Airways, is to get us back into the basic science of aerodynamics so that we all understand what's going on. If we do this, we have a much better chance of preventing these untoward incidents.
Bob, it sounds like an obvious point to hit on in a flight review, because obviously people tend to forget it over time. It has to be what's happening.
Not so much that we forget it. Unfortunately, many of us are not taught it. And stalls are one area where we flight instructors are extremely timid in taking students through stalls. We take them up to the burble, we take them up to the chirping stall horn, but very seldom do we fulfill the requirements of the private pilot practical test standards and take them through a full stall. A full stall break. And because of this is why so many of us are unprepared later on when we're out there by ourselves. We simply have never experienced this kind of thing, and it's something that truly needs to be done at the primary level.
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about something maybe even ahead of the primary level. You have an upcoming ground school at Bob Miller Flight Training, and you're actually inviting casual observers who may not have any known intention at this point of getting a pilot certificate, and I want to talk about that. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. Talking now about something that's coming up at Bob Miller Flight Training in a couple of weeks. Bob, you have, starting on January 21st, a 12-week ground school course for private and sport pilots, and you are making this open not only to people who are acknowledged seekers of one of those certificates, but just as kind of an introductory lesson for people who aren't even sure they are interested in getting a certificate. Tell us, first of all, why, and second of all, how do you market that?
Well, ground schools are something that are extremely useful, particularly in the dead of winter when we cannot get out to do the kind of flying that we enjoy. So January, February is a great time to conduct ground training. We're always looking for ways of saving money for the students, getting them in, getting them into a disciplined way of study without having to go on an hourly private lesson rate. And of course, the best way to do this is in a group lesson. So I've taken the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, the FAA publication, combined it with Dan Dwyer's book, a workbook that matches the handbook, and put together a 12-week program that is highly structured. It is targeted for both seasoned pilots who would like to take a refresher, private pilot candidates in training, and we're doing it in such a way that it always makes the individual who is not a pilot, who is a wannabe pilot, create it in such a way that they feel comfortable attending the course as well. This past year or this past season, we spent a lot of time and effort promoting Discovery flights. We sold over 100 Discovery flights in the last 2 weeks of December. And these are individuals who are going to come out for the first time and get into an airplane and experience the joy of flying. And we're wrapping that experience around an opportunity for them, once they do this or even before they take the flight, to enroll in this particular ground school program. So they can see firsthand, meet other pilots, sit in the classroom. Much of it may be beyond their comfort level in the sense that we, in some cases, go into considerable detail, but nonetheless try to make them feel comfortable in the process of learning how to fly, both from the experiential level in the cockpit as well as in the classroom.
Okay, now you've been very open with your some of your methods. And so for the folks around the country who run other flight schools, how do you market this? How do you reach people who might be interested but have not really thought it through to the point of knowing they want a certificate?
Well, we're marketing it. We've got a big sign out in front of the school out on the roadway, you know, indicating that a ground school is beginning. We have all of the names and addresses of the individuals who purchased the Discovery flights. We're in the process now of sending them a card or an announcement inviting them to inform the individual that they bought the Discovery flight for, let them know that this opportunity exists. That's how we're doing it for the new people. All of the people that are enrolled in flight training at the school, of course, are being informed of this. And then all of the pilots at our local airport. We have 50 airplanes based at our airport. We're sending them a notification that this is available to them as a refresher course. We've got lots of names and addresses of area pilots, and I've, of course, promoted it in over the airwaves. You know, we're not looking for a huge turnout. Frankly, we have only room in the wintertime in heated facilities for just 30 people. We're selling it for $179 for the 12-week program, which includes the two workbooks. So it, from a cost perspective for the student, it's extremely reasonable. It comes down to about $10 for a two-hour session, and I don't think you can beat that anywhere.
Well, now, do you have any previous experience with getting folks who are not on the normal pilot track into your classroom, or is this going to be kind of a first shot at this to see how it goes?
No, this is we've done this before. We ran one in July and August, and fully half the class were first timers, never before in an airplane. They were just coming out. They had an interest, a lifelong interest in some cases, in learning to fly. They just either didn't have the time or the money or the opportunity, but that did not remove from them their interest in learning about things aviation. And so it does work, and we spend a lot of, in fact, we invite them out a half an hour early so they can mix with other pilots that are in the class. We take a nice break in the middle again where they can mix with other pilots. This mixing between non-pilots and pilots usually generates a few free rides on the part of the aircraft owners who invite others to come along. It's a great way to build enthusiasm and excitement. What we have to do in a flight school is do more than just, you know, reach out and provide private lessons to those that have the means to take them. We need to create excitement. We need to bring in members of the public, expose them to aviation, expose them to other pilots. And this is just another way of making that happen. I guess in the final analysis, it's incumbent upon each flight school operator to keep the pot boiling, keep trying new things, keep reaching out, finding different ways, better ways to bring people into the flight school, onto the airport grounds, into the classroom, and show them the excitement of aviation and having a recognized, organized ground training program is one good way to do that.
How did it work out in the summer? Did you get anybody who bit the hook?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we did. We and that was a larger class. We had about 40 to 50 people in that class, and I judge we probably got seven, maybe eight pilots out of it. These are individuals who, frankly, I didn't think were the most likely candidates. We had a couple of housewives step up to the plate after taking the course and began taking lessons. We have a light sport pilot training program, which is a great way of bringing people in that want to come in maybe just with one foot rather than both feet and go the sport pilot route. And having a sport pilot training curriculum online, that really facilitated that. So it's a great way to bring in, and that's all our ultimate objective as a flight school, is to bring in people who eventually will become full-time students.
Well, we'll wish you all the luck in the world with that, Bob, and we'll check back with you late in the spring to see how that's turning out.
Thanks, Paul.
You can read the January issue of Bob Miller's newsletter at www.overtheairwaves.com. You'll also find an option to receive an email notice whenever a new issue comes out. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.